We're rolling. What episode is this? 26?
26 might be 27. I gotta check.
I don't know. 26, 27. Yeah, it's been a little bit, right? All right, we had a busy week. I had a lot going on. So much going on. We got the Celtics. The Bruins got eliminated. Celtics are on right now. It's halftime, so you know he's trying to rush me out of here. The Karen Reed trial.
Crazy stuff.
Karen Reed trial is fucking madness. Tonight we brought a expert witness with the Karen Reed trial. My friend and colleague, Paulie Black, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of the microphone, Paulie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paulie Black.
Paulie Black.
Yes, that's your name. Paulie?
Say your name. I can't hear it.
Don't worry, we can hear it. Just talking on the microphone. Paulie was here. He was my very first guest on the podcast. And when I asked him what he did, his answer was? Do you remember?
Yeah, get high.
No, you said cocaine. I said, what do you do, Paulie? You said cocaine and heroin.
Yeah.
Paulie is coming up on 5 months sober.
Yep.
He's still in my sober house. For those who don't know Paulie, he lived outside in a tent at one point for how many years straight?
5 years
straight he lived in a tent using drugs. I talked to some outreach workers in Lowell, and they said when it would snow and it was really cold, they'd go looking for him, and he would refuse to come in. So he's like the Bear Grylls of homeless people. But lo and behold, Paulie's got almost 5 months sobriety under his belt. Right on Christmas, they found him overdosed in the cold, wedged in between an air conditioning unit behind some bushes in the Social Security building. He had, was it a heart attack?
Yep. Right.
A heart attack and an overdose. And basically they told him if he's on some very serious medication, they told him if he gets high again, he's going to die. And, you know, maybe that's what it took. Right, Paulie?
Yep.
Maybe that's right, what it took. So Paulie's got, he's going to have 5 months sober. So that's awesome. You know, I love having Paulie around. He's my guy. And a lot of people that follow me on social media know Paulie Black. And Bundy worked today. It might be the first time Bundy actually worked a full day. And man, like, I don't want to say, you know, his whole life, but I'm going to say it's been 10, 15, 20 years. He's just gotten out of jail and stole things and everything. And he actually went in with a guy who was a framer in my house today. And he was doing a deck and Bundy worked with him all day. And I went to get him for the podcast. And he's like, I am fucking wiped out. So we'll give Bundy a pass. So I grabbed Mr. Black. You know, it's funny. We were talking about, you know, things going on. And I was joking. I says, I'm going to bring... I says, Paulie, the Karen Reed trial was on the TV the other day. And I'm like, Paulie, shh. And all of a sudden, he's like, she's innocent. Yeah, that was a nephew. I'm like, no way, Paulie. You actually know about this case. So tell us what you think, Paul.
I think she's guilty. I'm innocent.
You think she's innocent?
Innocent, and then his nephew did it.
Really?
Yep.
I think, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot to it. A lot of people are thinking something like that. What led you to that conclusion? What made you think that?
Because he was hugging his girl and with his friend and showing him his knuckles.
Oh, yeah. In the picture, right? He's pointing at his knuckles or something.
He's pointing at his knuckles.
Ah.
On the TV.
Yeah. This Friday on the witness stand in the Karen Reed trial, they got what's the guy's name? Brian Higgins. He's a former ATF agent, I believe.
Yeah.
He's going to be on the stand. He was in the bar with what's his name? Brian Albert. Is that who it is?
Yeah.
And they were like play fighting in that bar in Canton, and all kinds of stuff going on there before the guy O'Keefe actually, and they found him outside on the lawn. But man, this case has had so many twists and turns, huh? There's no way she gets found guilty, right?
She's 100% innocent.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. There's just no way, right? I mean, there's just too much.
the text at 227 or the Google search at 227.
How long does the body?
How long does it, or something like that.
Yeah. And the deleted phone calls from her?
Yeah.
She's saying, I didn't delete any phone calls.
Yeah.
Massive cover up. Massive cover up, right?
Yeah. It's cover up for sure.
Yeah. I just don't. The prosecution just has, at this point, has to be saying, I mean, they can't just fold up their tent and quit. You know, they gotta keep going. But I just don't see, I mean, talk about reasonable doubt, right? There's so much reasonable doubt in this case. There's so much reasonable doubt. It's almost as if, you know, everyone like Paul and yourself, everyone's drawn their own conclusions that, you know, there's a massive cover-up. Definitely. But we'll see. You never know what a jury's going to do. You know, it's like another trial this week was the Donald J. Trump trial, which seems like political persecution to me. I don't see any other former president having prosecutors go after him. And I don't know what Donald Trump has on people. I don't know why people hate him so much and they fear him so much. But I'll tell you what. They're scared of this fucking guy. And the guy's got balls. He doesn't care. Tomorrow he's going down to the Bronx. He's going down to the South Bronx. And wherever this guy goes, there's 100,000, 200,000 people. It's amazing. This guy, what do you call it? Joe Biden was in New Hampshire the other night. And granted, did you see the crowd?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I could draw, I believe I could draw a bigger crowd. And then they tried to cover up and say, oh, it was invitation only. Like, who's he inviting? You know?
Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit. Bullshit. I don't know. But so many people hate Trump. I don't know. You know? God forbid you say anything about, oh, something was funny with that election. Oh, you're a crazy person. But you see Trump go somewhere. There's 8 gazillion people. This guy shows up. Zilch, right? So the jury's out on that, I believe. The trial wrapped up yesterday. They got to be in deliberations.
The judge gave him a week off.
Oh, that's what it is. That's why I haven't heard anything about that. The judge gave him a week off.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine. I think the only way he gets convicted is if it's just 12 people who are just staunch Democrats who hate Donald Trump. I mean, even if you got a couple of Democrats in there and they follow the letter of the law, they're going to say, hey, this
is bullshit.
Yeah, this is bullshit. You know? Donald Trump don't got to rape no fucking... Is it Stormy Daniels? Is that who it is?
Yeah.
Like, what's your real name? Stormy. It's like me taking the stand as Bean Shooter Lee. You know what I mean? The fuck are Stormy? So, yeah, we got the Karen Reed, we got the Stormy Daniels, we got Donald Trump, we got a lot going on. We got the Boston Celtics who got to win tonight. We just have to. We got to take control. The Dallas Mavericks last night upset Minnesota. Huh? Looked like Minnesota had that game in the bag.
Yeah.
Then they just started splashing threes. They were making it rain, huh, Paulie?
Yeah,
they were. So, Dallas up 1-0. First game was in Minnesota. Celtics stole the first game. I mean, talk about lucky. Talk about a major blunder by the Indiana Pacers coach, no?
Yep.
I mean, a few of them, but, you know, you got to foul. You got to foul immediately. You can't let Jaylen Brown take that shot to tie it. That was, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe they come back and won that game. To anybody who was at that game in the Boston Garden, that's awesome. When you see a game like that in person, you know, there's no feeling like it. Like, you know, my father would always say, I'd go to Super Bowls or this or that, been a World Series. And he'd say, oh, I'd rather watch it. And no, you wouldn't. When you're there, you know, in that crowd, it's fucking electric. You know, there's nothing better. Right? I took Paul. You remember Paul?
Yeah.
Took Paul to his first Red Sox game. It was the 1-game wild card against the Yankees.
Yep.
And my good friend Sean Cody, great ticket scalper, right up there with Tweety. I always say Sean's the best. And I got, you know, I had some people say, well, what about Tweet? I said, all right, okay. Jason Coughlin out of South Boston, right up there. Sean Cody's got him in years, though. He's got a little seniority. So, but Sean Cody gave me two front row monster seats for Paulie Black's first Red Sox game. And it was Red Sox-Yankees. One game, wild card playoff game, which was fucking awesome. We rocked them. And then I parked right out in front of Fenway Park because I was late. So when we, after the game, lo and behold, my truck was not where I left it. So I knew this cop from South Boston, Matty Ryan. So I took a piece of paper and I wrote, Matty Ryan, D4. Like, you know, he worked in District 4. He was a Boston police officer. I wrote BPD. So he was trying to call me. I didn't realize it during the game. The cops were calling him up. they thought it was actually his truck. And he was caught off guard. He's like, what do you mean? I'm home. You know, I'm in bed. And they're like, yeah, all right. And they just fucking hooked it and towed it. And I ended up in a tow yard in Charlestown. And Mark Goodman actually came and picked me up at the police station there over by Cathedral Projects in the South End. And because I had to go there and find out where the car was and pay. And me and Paulie left the game and we took one of those, you know, the guy who drives you around with the, like on the 10 speed with the little basket in the back. Yeah, it was it was a night to remember, Paulie. Also, I had quite an eventful week this week. Did you hear what happened to me, Justin?
No, what happened?
Well, someone tried to burn down my house.
Oh, Jesus.
An arsonist.
Oh.
Yep.
Do we know who?
Yes.
All right.
Paulie Black's an arsonist, if you didn't know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Paulie's burned down a house, right?
Yep.
What else have you burned down?
Bridges.
Burned down the School Street Bridge in Lowell. The whole thing, it was an old wooden bridge. Thing collapsed. He shut down like half the city. How old were you then?
15 and a half.
15 and a half. Not just 15. Paulie's throwing the old 15. How old were you when you burned down the house on Bowers?
I was 17.
17. And how much time did you get for that one?
A lot.
Okay, well, back. This was an old friend of Paulie's back in Paulie's Firebug days.
Yeah.
So we'll start off with I'll say I can't really say he definitely wasn't one who tried to set my house on fire. But it's like an inference case. You know what an inference case is?
Uh-huh.
Do you know what an inference case is, Justin?
Sure.
So that's a legal term, an inference case. An inference case is, let's say somebody smashes the door to the sub shop, Pizza Maria. Those guys always take care of me. Pizza Maria and Braintree, Washington Street. Let's say somebody smashes the door to the pizza shop downstairs with a golf club. Walks in, you know, steals some stuff, leaves. The police pull up. Here's Justin walking across the parking lot holding a golf club with a sandwich in his hand. Now, you didn't catch him in the sub shop, but one could infer, Justin, one could infer that you were the one who smashed that door in and stole that steak and cheese sandwich. So that's what an inference case is. So we'll get back to Ronnie and the inference case afterwards, but I'm going to tell you how I met Ronald McGowan. Remember my guest on here, Darren Brown, D Black?
Yeah.
D Black's part of this story, and I call him today, we were laughing. The story's so crazy, people would just be like, no way, but yeah, it happened. 1987, Bill Rucker House of Correction. I'm 17. This kid comes in, I think, 88. He's 17, 18. Sorry about that with the pen. He comes in, and he's a complete idiot. And jail was really crazy back then. I mean, Billrick House of Correction behind the wall was a fucking zoo. cops didn't get on the tiers, bombs going off, drugs. People would, back then you could smoke and people would make these homemade bombs. They'd use antennas or old batteries. They'd haul them out and they would pack them with the sulfur match heads and cigarette ashes and pack it and pack it and pack it. And you could take an extension cord and cut the end so it's just the wires and put it in like the battery of this bomb and throw it out on the tier and then you'd plug it in. And it, you know, it would sound like a fucking stick of dynamite going off. You know what I mean? Scare the fuck. There was just so much stuff going on. But this kid come in, Ronnie McGuan. And Darren Brown and Randy Brown, rest in peace, was a sick, sick. I mean, you could say this is practical joking, but it was to us. So he asked the kid, Ronnie McGuan, if he wants a sandwich. Ronnie McGuan says yes. He shits in a peanut butter jar, mixes it up with peanut butter, puts it on the bread with the jelly. The old shit sandwich gag. You know, a timeless classic. The oldest one in the book, the old shit sandwich. So he sends it down. The kid starts eating it. He literally eats half the sandwich. Throws away. He gets sick afterwards. That was my introduction to Ronald McGuan. 6 months after this happened, he's in CWP, which is the county work program, and you see the guys on the side of the highway picking up trash with the stick and pick, they call it. Randy Brown, once again, tells this kid they're cooking up a plan to escape. So he's drawing up a map and the whole fucking nine, right? He says, Monday morning, I have this girl. She's going to pick us up. There was like this field like near a highway stick and pick. And he goes, she's going to pick us up, da-da-da, on the other side. So they get the kid all riled up. Randy Brown, Darren was there. I think it was Darren. So he's like, all right, you ready? Yeah, she's over there. I can see her, blah, blah, blah. He's like, on the count of three. So the cop sits down to like eat lunch. He's like, on the count of three, go. One, two, three. So they go like this, two of them. And this kid, McGuan, takes off, you know, like he's shot out of a can and the cop starts screaming. The cop chasing him. The cop falls when he's chasing him, stepped in like a hole or something and went down and smashed his head on a rock. The cop hurt himself, and like stitches, staples in his head or something. The kid keeps running. He runs into the woods. There's no car there. They surround the woods. They arrest the kid for escape. They gave him like a 6 to 10. Yeah. Remember? They gave him like a 6 to 10. He had like 30 days left on his sentence. The kid was just a complete crash dummy. So 2 years ago, I get a call from a guy, Lawrence Tracy. Sorry, they call him LT. So I just automatically thought Lawrence Taylor. So they call him LT. He works with reintegration. He works with the state prisons. When I go up there and speak, he calls me up. And he said, hey, Mike, I got a guy who's just finishing like, 8 years. He needs a sober house. So I said, oh, is he all right? Yeah, he's all right. I go, what's his name? He says, Ronald McGuan. So I immediately just start shaking my head. I go, oh, yeah, I'll take him. So I hang up the phone. I call Darren Brown. And Darren Brown's like, I had to do my Christian duty and feed him. So it was so long ago. Like I said, 87. What's that? Fucking 38 years ago. 37. It's a fucking long, people, fuck, probably 80% of the people watching this podcast weren't around in 1987. So I said, sure, I'll take him. So he comes to my house. Hey, I remember you. I'm not, obviously not going to say, hey, remember when you ate the shit sandwich? So he comes in the house. He's actually in one of a video of mine that went crazy. That wasn't the one that ended up on the show, but it was the one where Frankie's there and Bundy and he's on the couch. I'm like, oh, how much time you got? And Frankie's like, oh, 27 years. Yeah. And then that kid's like, oh, like 25. And Bundy goes, oh, the same. And I'm like, oh, we got like 75 years and I got 13 and da, da, da. So he's done that ruined his life, that escape. So he comes in the house and he's one of these scrappy guys, scrappy dude. You know what a scrapper is?
Yeah, I got it. No.
No. Like a legit scrapper.
Like a metal scrapper?
Exactly. Justin. Paulie's been known to scrap a little metal. Huh, Paulie?
Yeah.
I can't say what he did in my neighborhood. I almost said it, but he's He's been in some buildings and relieved them of all their copper fixtures. Amongst anything, at the end, he was taking the fucking paneling and the flooring and bringing in the soap. I'm like, all right, Paulie, enough's enough. So he's a scrapper, you know? So he'd be in my house and I'd be out back, he'd have air conditioners and wires, and he's stripping the wire and balls of copper. And he was, you know, like anybody who's a scrapper, they're not the cleanest. You know, nothing against scrappers. It's like guys who do oil changes all day long. I'm not going to shit on you, but, you know, little fucking grease under the nails. You know what I mean? Wasn't the cleanest guy, Ronnie. So he's scrapping, and now my backyard looks like a goddamn junkyard. There's fucking air conditioning units, and fucking he's out there clanging away and banging on rims. And so finally I says, hey, dude, you got to clean this stuff up. So we get to a point. Hold on. Paulie, put that AC back on. Paulie, shut the fucking AC off. It's like a fucking goddamn oven in here. You know how to turn it on?
Same way I shut it off.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, no flies on you. Okay, where were we? So the backyard it's like a fucking junkyard, right? There's just metal, everything. So he pays the rent. This is over a year ago. He pays the rent, $800, $850, $750, whatever it was at the time for the month. 10 days later, he starts getting high or whatever. He says, hey, I'm moving out. I'm out of here. He's like, I paid for the month, and I only stayed 10 days, so you owe me, whatever he said, $500. So I'm like, yeah, that's not how it works, dude. You don't, like, move in an apartment and stay there a fucking week and then say, well, I moved out. I go, you got to give me a 14-day notice, 30-day notice, something. I got to fill this bed. So he's feeling some type of way. So now I tell him, hey, listen, clean out that backyard. I'll throw you a couple hundred. So before this happened, I'm not going to say Bundy slapped him. But there might have been some type of little altercation. Not in the house. Might have been down the street. Might not have been. Bundy wasn't a fan of his. So now he spends like 4 or 5 days cleaning out the scrap metal out of the back of the sober house. And now in the meantime, I got to go clean out his room. Now it's a fucking disaster. And we notice on the wall, there's all these, it's like if I held a cigarette lighter to your wall, right? You know, that black mark, So it's all over the fucking wall in the corner by his bed. So I don't know if he's burning metal. I don't know what they do, these people. You know, he's just playing with fire. Now, I don't remember that he's an arsonist or a firebug. So I'm like, you motherfucker, I got to paint this room. So now he cleans out the whole backyard. And I tell him, you know, you're not getting any money, Ronnie. Run along. So here we are a year later. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I'm on vacation. I get a text message from him, you know, you owe me $300. You better give me my fucking money. So I'm like, I'm looking at my phone like, who the fuck? And then I realize it's fucking shit sandwich, boy. So I said, go see Bundy. He has some money for you. Yeah, so he can't really read or write, I don't think. I think he had someone else's phone or something. So nothing happens. Monday, I don't know how he's reading this text 2-3 weeks later, but Monday he must have read that text. So someone he saw that he was using their phone must have told him. He goes over the soap house. Bundy, yeah, come in. So Bundy's room's right to the right. It's like a prison cell. It's like 8x6. He's got a futon, a cat, and a TV, and a fan. That's Bundy's, it's a prison cell. So Bundy looks up and this fucking guy's standing like above him. Yeah, Mike said, you got some money for me, you know? So Bundy jumps up because he's not a fan of his. Anyway, now he's invaded Bundy's space. So Bundy, not going to say he put his hands on him, but he opened the front door and helped him out. helped him out the front door. So now this guy's down the end of the street screaming some stuff. I'll burn the fucking house down. Bye, yeah, get out of here. So he's texting the other kid in the house, I got a can of gas, I'll burn you. Now I'm not thinking nothing of it. I'm like, yeah. Now I'm not realizing, Paulie Black hasn't told me yet. He's like, yeah, he's my co-defendant in the case. He burned this down and that down. He goes, I was telling these guys, he'll come set the trash barrel on fire or something like, you know.
Something real stupid.
So these, you know, they're a different breed, Justin. You get a beef with an arsonist. You know what I mean? So his other buddy, him and Paulie and Rusty Regan, they all used to hang out together. Yeah. Rusty. So Rusty burned down the bridge with Paulie. And then Rusty, he played a little game with some Cambodian family in Lowell. He blocked all the doors to the house with mattresses, poured gas all around, set it on fire. And how many people died in that fire?
A lot. I forget how many. There was a bunch of them.
Yeah, four or five people. Burned to death. Rusty, his other... So I'm like, oh my God, he was buddies with Rusty. And when Rusty got found guilty, he flipped the table over. You see it on those shows sometimes when people flip out in the courtroom. He's one of them mental cases. So, you know, these arsonists, they're a dangerous bunch. You know? They're a different breed. So now he's got my attention. Like, he's sending texts. Oh, bitch, have my money. You know, yeah. I mean, whatever. Nothing really gets me going much anymore. But... So, after he leaves, a couple people are smelling something burning, like plastic burning. And no one's putting it together. This was like 2 hours before where, you know, Bundy helped him out the door and all that. He was yelling that stuff. So, the kid Left Eye, you know Left Eye Lopez, my house? He's got one eye. We call him Left Eye Lopez. So, Left Eye says, you know, I'm coming up through the house yesterday. I come up through the back. There's a hole in the fence people cut through. He goes, and there was a guy back there, and he asked me to borrow $20 and said you were giving him money. He said he'd give me back 30. So now we go walking around the house, and on the corner of the back of the house, there's a chair set up right there, and the whole bottom of the vinyl siding is all melted and black with black soot going up. Like, he was sitting there lighting the house on fire. And Left Eye Lopez caught him in the act, I think, right? He must have come stomp. He probably saw him coming, like, oh, you got 20 I can borrow? And then just, like, skedaddled out of there. So we believe Left Eye caught him in the act. Wow. So now all bets are off now. Now you're trying to, you know, hurt me and, you know, and more, never mind me or my family. You're trying to hurt Bundy. I mean, you're trying to burn out Bundy. So Bundy's now, he's beside himself. So now it's fucking Tuesday morning. We're putting all this together. So now I'm finding out where this kid stays. He's got, it's like a subculture, these scrappers, you know? They all, they stick together. They all, one of them will have like this truck, you know, like an old F-150 where it's like, you know, the tailgate's bungee shut. And there's all refrigerators in the back and air conditioners. You see them. You see these people. So now I got a line on him where he's, and then now I get a hold of like a brother-in-law. And the brother-in-law, you know, likes me, and he does well for himself. And I get him on the phone. Someone gives him my number. He calls me. He says, "What's going on?" So now me and Bundy are actively hunting Ronnie McGowan. This is Tuesday, the next day. So I get a hold of his brother-in-law. I says, "Hey, is he living over on Methuen Street in Lowell in that house?" I already got a good idea. He's there. I says, "Where the fuck is he?" He says, "Where is he? Take a guess. Where is he?"
"No."
"Jail." I'm like, motherfucker. He goes, "He got arrested last night." He says, "Breaking in a fucking pawn shop. Stealing stolen goods." I kind of like, you know, you can't knock this, you know. So he gets arrested. He goes, "Oh, he's in Billerica House of Correction." So I'm like, fuck, they don't hold anyone anymore. They let everyone out on bail, so this and that. So I call somebody I know who's a Lowell cop. I said, "Hey, I got to find something out about some guy. I'm looking for him. Someone said he got arrested." He goes, "Give me his name." Then he calls me back. He goes, "Holy fuck, this cop actually arrested him, Osborne, who fucking drew down on me before Osborne. Outside the Golden Gloves, twice I had a thing with Osborne. One time I was going to meet this girl, it was like 12 at night, and I'm walking. It's in the middle of the winter, and she worked in this like building, and there was a parking lot. There's like three cars in it. So I'm sitting on a bench, and I don't know, this guy's following me. I'm waiting for her to get out of work at like midnight. So here she comes walking alone to her car. It's like pitch blackout, and I'm creeping up on her just to scare the fuck out of her. She opens her driver's door, gets in. I grab the door. She's fucking scared to death. I go over the passenger side. I'm driving. They're watching me like a team of fucking detectives, two cars. They think they're witnessing a fucking carjacking. Yeah. They draw down, they gunpoint, rip me out of the car. Her, she's like, that's my boyfriend. So then another time Osborne drew out the old pistola on me right outside the Golden Gloves and pointed it right at me. Told me to put my hands up, and I refused. See, being white, you can refuse that stuff sometimes. They don't just kill you right away. But so Osborne, but now he follows me on social media, and we let bygones be bygones. Osborne, now I see him, and we joke about it. So it's all good. But Osborne arrested him. He broke in a, not a church, a temple. Not a temple. What are the Indians and the Asians? It's a temple. Yeah, it's a temple. It's like, it might have been like a Buddhist temple or something. Yeah. So he broke in somewhere else, and I guess he cut himself on the glass, and he bled all over the place. Then he goes over to this temple. He uses a pry bar to pry open the door, and there's like a monk in there sleeping. So the monk's calling 911, panic, scared to fucking death. This nut's fucking rummaging through the place, fucking probably stealing the gold chalice or whatever. I don't know what they're doing, the fuck. And he gets arrested in the thing. And so I was upset. I mean, if he had a low bail, I was really going to bail him out. So me and Bundy, real, like, you know, you try to burn my house down, you fucking, all bets, this is war, you know? I can't sleep with this guy prowling around the fucking streets. What's he going to go to my house next? So I called Bill Rickhouse of Correction yesterday, and I says, do you have a Ronald McGuan? Hold on, they can send me the records bail. Yeah, we got him. I go, what's his bail? The guy says, $2,500. I said, can you do me a favor? He's like, what's that? I said, can you make it $25 million? Hey, the cop chuckles. He goes, I'll see what I can do. So I said, all right, I hang up. So now today, I call somebody else who's a guard in the Billerick House of Correction, and he's out right now, my guy Jeff. And I said, can you see where this guy is, this and that? And he made a phone call to somebody. Might have been a white shirt deputy. And the deputy tells him what happened. And the deputy said, you mean he tried to burn out Mr. Bundles? They called me back. He goes, the guy knew right who you guys were. So so this guy is such a piece of shit, this Ronnie, where his bail could literally be $150. And he'd stay there for 5 years. There's nobody going, you know, it's not like you get in trouble tonight, right? Yeah. Your bail's $50,000. Your brother's out here and your mom and people are fucking passing the hat. Even me and Paulie Black are throwing in a fucking nickel each, you know, and you'll be out by sunrise, right? this kid would sit in there for eternity on like $100 bail. So I don't know. I think he's like, it's not the old days. It's not like a cop's going to go fuck with him. Like the cops, you know, the cop was laughing. He goes, I feel like going and confronting him myself. He tried to burn out Mr. Bundles. But, you know, someone like that, what happens with someone like that is he has no money. No one's sending him money. So everything to a scumbag like this is working for the cop, which I would never do. You know, mopping the tear and cleaning up and getting a job, working in the kitchen. And, you know, someone like that would like, let's say, you know, your family worked in there and I broke in your house, Justin, right? Your family are all gods in there. They just put you on a list, like, don't hire him. He's just on shitbag status. Yeah. Like, don't give him a job. He's not going to be the runner. He's not going to be working in the kitchen, eating from the office's mess hall, the OM. Like, none of that. Like, you're on ass status, buddy. Not to mention, me and Bundy have a good name in there. You know, so now you got the screws that are giving him no play. And if anyone else finds out, not that anyone's going to do my bidding for me or bang him out, but it could happen. But they're just, you know, he's just, he's not going to get any play. He's on fucking, he's on total ass status. So maybe if he gets hungry enough, he might go back to the old shit sandwich days, Justin. Yeah, the only option left. Back to the shit sandwich. So yeah, there was that when with Mr. McGuan. So I'm now, let's see if we can get this. I'm trying to call this cop and see if he can find out what was in his backpack when he was arrested. Oh, someone, oh, I can't say, right? Someone must have some money on the game. How's that? That's good, right? Like he said to me today, he goes, imagine you're to pull everywhere with guards and cops and cons. And It's all right. So it was an eventful week. You know, someone tries to burn down your house, tends to get your attention, Justin.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I have a see that I haven't said arm. That was like the first time. I'm really trying to tighten up. Paulie, stand up straight. Will you stop slow?
I am straight.
All right, Paulie. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, what do you want me to say? What am I doing?
Yeah,
I'm doing good. I'm doing. I go to AA every night. I go to a cafe every day.
Recovery cafe,
yeah.
Yeah.
I stay there most of the day. And I just keep doing what I'm doing, keep going forward, not backwards. Trying to stay shining
fucking
ahead.
Right. I love it.
Not back.
Yeah, you're working with Hooch this week, maybe?
Yeah, I'm working with Hooch maybe tomorrow.
Awesome. Got the scooter up and running. It's funny. He was looking for a scooter. And when he got that stimulus money, he was living with me. We went to a place in Walden there, near Town Line. It was like a little moped scooter place. And he bought this brand new scooter. How about he's buying a scooter. Someone's like, oh, this guy got a scooter or that guy. He goes to buy the scooter. It's his fucking scooter that he bought 3 years ago. It came back to him like a boomerang.
Same one.
Not the same kind. The same exact
one.
Yeah. Yeah, it came back to him. So, Paulie, congratulations, man. Everybody loves you. Like, when I put a video, so many people put comments. It's so good to see Paulie smiling and laughing and happy. And you know, just like me, knowing everyone, who would have thought? You know, you'd have people fucking rooting for you. Yep. You know? When he was homeless, he'd stand on the side of the highway with a sign and, you know, he'd say people are always, Paulie Black, you know, giving
me $50.
$100. Giving him money, you know? So, Paulie, so many people are pulling for you. And you being my first guest, it's been about 6 months. I mean, you get out of the hospital right after Christmas.
It'll be 6 months June 1st.
All right. June 1st, yeah. So you were in the hospital for a while there, right up until Christmas. So, yeah, it's been 6 months since I started this podcast. You were my very first guest. And, you know, you've had some ups and downs since then. But right now, you're doing great. And it only gets better. And you know I'm pulling for you. You'd always say, Mike, you know, you don't got many people left out there, you know. And I always considered you a friend. I always liked you. And we've had our differences. Well, you know, we've argued. Or I've done something. You've done something. But you know, I'd like to think you always knew. You always had a place in my house.
Yeah.
You know, if you were doing the right thing, and I always told you that, Paulie, if you ain't doing drugs and getting high, you'll always have a fucking bed in my house. And
that, I do.
You're fucking right. You get the best room in there. And Paulie, thanks for coming on.
Nope.
Love you, buddy.
I love you too.
Awesome. Congratulations on your 6 months. And that's a wrap.